There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
Back in studio with Mr. Andy. Say hello, Andy.
Hey, everybody.
And second swing's finest, Mr. Aaron Roth.
Yeah.
And good evening,
and
gentlemen.
Should we say Winsong's finest, too?
I don't know about that. that's a little, I think if you're not yet into the member guest tournament yet, I don't think you can say that.
We were just talking about this the other day at happy hour. I haven't been in. Have you made the Paso?
I've played in a Paso.
You have? Mm-hmm. Have you played in a Paso as a member?
Yeah.
You have? Oh, good for you.
Uh-huh. Yeah. 2017 or 18.
How long have you been a member?
A while.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I don't know why I thought you were like year three, four. You're like 6, 7.
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you.
Joined fall of 2017.
Yeah. So Roth and I are still over. I'm hoping one of us makes it this
year. You guys
year.
Are the most non-rookies, though.
Yeah, you've said that before.
Both of you came on the scene hot.
Came on the scene, hot. Friday game.
It took me like a couple years to really get ingrained.
Here's what I found out, though. If you say you're in 20 club and you say yes to Friday game.
Yeah.
And you say yes to the banker game.
Yeah, you have to get invited to Friday game to say yes to Friday game.
It
took me a while to do that. Thanks, Beef.
Came on. Well, yes. You're there now.
No, so, man.
Congratulations.
Hopefully. At least I have temporary tour status.
Friday tour status.
Man, that'd be sick if we had like club
like status
cards. Yeah. Oh, it's
that's
like
pretty funny.
It's like the Premier League.
Yeah. Like if you win demoted. A major, you have exemptions like forever.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Man, that'd be sick.
Yeah.
Okay. So second swing's finest, Mr. Aaron Roth. We've been trying to get you on the pod for a while.
Yeah,
so.
Man. Thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I remember the first time I met Roth would have been in second swing, like most people in Minnesota, probably. Your office.
Which bay was it? Was it the...
I don't know. This would have been like years ago, probably. And he fit me for
was
something.
This before we... doubled inside.
Yeah, right, for sure, COVID. Dude. For sure. Yeah.
Talking to the mic ago. So you don't get the Grant Bessie treatment.
Oh, gotcha.
Grant got shredded, man.
Oh.
Yeah, in the comments?
Well, he deserves to be shredded for a few things.
That's fair.
I love him, but.
Well, so how about for our listeners that don't know you, which probably isn't going to be a ton of them because a lot of people go to Second Swing and a lot of our listeners are at the farm. Why don't you tell people your background and the reason we wanted to have you on the pod was to talk about kind of club fitting and, you know, how to get a little bit better at golf by using Second Swing's motto, which is, it's not you, it's your clubs.
Well, absolutely.
Which I take to heart, so.
Well, I only see you occasionally in the swing. You're not really ever trying, but my background.
Once a week.
Yeah, maybe more. I started with Second Swing 13 years ago. Just randomly happened to play with Russ Higgins, the owner of Second Swing, and I was in between work. We'll just leave that where it is. And always loved golf. Wanted to get in the business, but I didn't want to be an assistant pro. The assistant pros, they never want to play. My better half, she's an assistant pro, and I'm sure we'll talk about her in a minute. But very difficult to play a lot of golf, and that's all I love to do. So I just started working there, and within the first month, really noticed how much tiny little changes. And this is back before launch monitors and all that stuff.
12 years ago is like, how were you guys fitting people 12 years ago?
We had two nets, two hitting bays, and use a lie board and just go with that. The 30-day play program, you know, where you buy something and you can exchange it within 30 days was used a lot more back then. But now with TrackMan, and we're spoiled. We have every piece of equipment you can think of for fitting golf clubs, for so any,
you've
for
seen
any
the, you've
player.
Seen the full gamut of
oh yeah
of fitting
yeah from nothing
so, so
to
you
track
were,
man four
so you were an assistant pro playing golf with the sec oh
well,
you weren't
I
you
wasn't
were, you were thinking
I
about
didn't
getting into
want
it
want to do that because then I would definitely not have time to play golf.
Yeah. So you wanted to find something where you could be able to play golf a bunch and still be involved with the sport?
Absolutely. Get in the industry, wasn't sure how, and just randomly run into Russ Higgins, one of the owners of Second Swing, and we hit it off and talked about his business, and it was game over from there. So I think it was like about a month or so in to me working. Like I said, I started noticing tiny little changes that you can make to your equipment. I did it to mine after going through a fitting, and that was eye-opening because I grew up, you know, graduated high school in the late 90s, and back in the 80s and 90s, you just grab stuff off the rack. This looks good. This feels good. All right, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, like it's some major manufacturer, like a PGA Superstore or Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever.
I was lucky when I was a kid. My head pro was really pro junior golf and trying to grow the game. And I was decent growing up, and he noticed that. So it kind of took me under his wing, not lesson-wise, but just trying to get me in the right events and getting me, you know,
playing.
Getting me playing and playing with the right people. I mean, the best thing that you can do as a junior or a beginner golfer is play with the best players you can, because you learn so much without even asking questions. You just watch how they go about their business, how they navigate the golf course. And I think that's a huge part of what really helped me, having somebody be that influence and kind of guide me the right direction. So after I got my first set of MP14s as a 105-pound, 5'4" kid at 13, 14.
I don't even know what MP14s are. And you mentioned that, so you noticed right away the changes you can make to a club. Like, what was it 12 years ago? Was it lead tape?
No, it wasn't lead tape. It was lie angle.
Okay.
Lead tape, I became obsessed with later on after getting into fittings, because Larry Bobka, another fitter, Larry the Legend, you got to get him on here. Oh my God.
We've been talking about, he's in Arizona right now, yes. But when he comes back,
well, he's back Thursday, hit him up.
Oh, he's already back Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been down in Scottsdale.
Yeah. He has a saying that I have definitely stolen, and it's not a golf club until there's lead tape on it. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny, swing weight and balance of a club is so overlooked. Quick story. I played Mizunos for 24 years. And the last set of Mizunos that I got, same specs as I always got, I get them. I'm an okay golfer. Open up the box, take 10 swings, and I hit 4 Tiger Woods on 18 at Riviera's out of those 10. Straight shank. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with this club? It can't be me.
Yeah.
So I checked the loft, checked the lie, checked the length, and then I checked swing weight. And I like it heavy. I want to feel that club head at the top of my swing. And it was off by like 4 points. As soon as I put lead tape on there, stripe show. It was perfect. Mm. But even though the manufacturer's tolerances have gotten so much better over the years, you still got to check those small things. And that's what we do. And that's, you know, a lot of places overlook that and don't take that into account. But it's very important. If you have no clue where the club head is, good luck.
Well, so, and you obviously fit people from, you know, professional athletes to the most amateur golfers. I've seen you fit, you know, like teenagers and kids and then, you know, really good club golfers and everywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number one or maybe even the top 3 things that you tell every single person, no matter what their skill level is when they come in to get fit? Is it, hey, you need to throw everything that you know away and look at, you know, let's look at the numbers? Or is it, you know, tell me what you play now, tell me what you like, and then you kind of fit around the golfer?
Yeah, everybody. And that's why I love what I do after doing 16,000 fittings in the last 13 years. It's no golfer is the same. Every golfer has a red flag or two, or some don't have any flags because they've never played. But it's fun to figure that out. Not just with their equipment, but what motivates them. You know, what's going to make them really happy with their experience? And how do I tailor my hour or two with them to do as best we can with their equipment and their golf game going forward? I mean, I look at golf as like a mini vacation. And I want to help everybody have more fun and play better during that vacation. And for a lot of the guys out there, I want to get them home faster to their wives so they are allowed to actually go play golf again.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I would say, I mean, everything is very, very important, but the club head at the end of the day is the most important aspect of it. Where the center of gravity is in the club. Majority of club heads, especially the irons these days, they just don't spin. And for like the junior player, a lot of them struggle getting the ball up in the air. You know, we're not moving to Scotland or Ireland. We play in Minnesota. It's an airborne game. And to be able to get the right height and right spin, it's a massive game changer if we can accomplish that. You never want to really go too light or too flexible with a shaft.
Mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's the weight of a shaft is pretty darn important.
Yeah.
When it comes to it, it's not just you swing X miles per hour, you need Y flex and you're good to go.
Well, I was going to say, not the case. And it's funny you mentioned that too. Cause like my buddies that are, you know, I would say casual golfers, I don't know how many times I've seen somebody like I play with them and they go, yeah, look at my driver, and they'll hold it with one hand and it'll go like this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because like when you go to Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever, you can buy the Stealth 2 Max, like the best driver out there, but it comes with like a stock shaft and it's just like whippy. Right. Like, I'm like, of course you can't swing that, dude. You're a 28 year old like athlete that's strong.
Right.
That thing's going to, you know, be a slice off the face of the planet every single time. Like it's too whippy for you.
Well, yeah, and we definitely run into that way more than the, holy cow, this rebar is way too much for you. Like, we want to go to that edge of the cliff with stiffness and weight and then take a step back.
Yeah, I remember two experiences with you, one with a driver fitting. I was, like, really fixated on having a lighter driver shaft for speed. I was like, oh, no, dude, I want the 60-gram shaft. And you're like, well, I'll hit this one. It was like a 70 gram shaft, and I'm like hitting the 70 gram shaft and I'm hitting a 60 gram shaft. I'm like, dude, I'm going to swing the 60 gram shaft faster. And you're like, bro, you hit the 70 gram shaft out of the middle of the face. That makes the ball go further.
And like, that's, and
I'm like, oh, like that makes a lot of sense. Like weight does actually matter and strike is everything, right? Strike is king.
It's everything.
Yeah.
It's everything. If I can help you find the center of the face more often, you're going to play better.
Yeah.
You know, and for a lot of players, they think just speed especially these days with all the different tools that we have. And I know you guys have them here and everybody has them, you know, for gaining speed. That's one thing. And for the juniors out there and for beginners, I'll tell every one of them, learn how to hit it hard and then we'll figure out how to hit it straight.
Yeah.
That's 100%. Because if you have any aspirations as a junior golfer to go play collegiately,
and you
don't, as a male, if you don't hit it 315, you better be the straightest hitter, like a Ben Siegel, and never make mistakes, because you're going to be the outlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many players out there that hit it so far, and with the new equipment, it goes so straight. It's like cheating.
What has the like experience been like? So obviously, you kind of got started in golf. Kind of interesting though, because you also like got started in fitting and then you fit a ton of people and you've become a, you know, master club fitter, whatever, all this stuff you have. But then you've also been a part of this like rocket ship company in Second Swing. That's like exploded to locations all over the US. Like, I'm kind of curious, like what's that experience has been like?
It's been phenomenal. I think, the second iteration of Second Swing when Simon took over again after,
when did they start too? Just so I know, it was like 2009 or 10.
The second
there,
iteration
right?
was 2009.
Okay.
But it started out of Simon's car when he was playing for the Gophers in college. Pretty cool. And then it blew up and that's a whole nother story. But, yeah, like I said, when I first started, it was the Minneapolis location and our Minnetonka location. We had two hitting bays. It's like 5,000 square feet, maybe. And now we've got basically seven locations and we now have 15 TrackMan hitting bays in our Minnetonka location.
And you guys just did a thing with the PGA of America.
Yep.
Right. For like club trade
handling all their trade
Yeah, you're on programs. Every commercial, like it's all over the place. And
oh, don't get started on the commercials.
Roth, what
did
do you
bring me an apple? Is that what you're getting at?
What do you think? What do you think's driven all that growth? Like people are, I mean, the pandemic was huge.
Well, that was absolutely unsustainable. And unless there's a second pandemic in 10, 15 years, it's not going to have an explosion like we just had. Yeah. It's just not going to happen. But I think with our position at Second Swing, with having not just all the new equipment, but having the value of used equipment to get somebody in the game with good stuff, it might be 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, but it's better than just getting a box set.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And with all the tweaks that we can make and with the equipment to last, you know, I guess it goes back to 2007, 2006, maybe with TaylorMade and adjustable weights and whatnot. And now that's just exploded through everything. There's so much we can do. And like, it comes back to center of gravity, matching the center of gravity of the club head and the golf ball. And when you do that in the center of the face, it's tough to
I'll tell you crooked. What, being in second swing and like trying to get fit for something, and let's say it's a driver shaft, and you're like, no, this is a driver shaft that you're like, okay, do you guys have one? And 10 times out of 10, you can go to Tim at the front desk and be like, all right, what do you need? And I'll be like, I need you to find me this. And I'll go, click, 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 click. He goes, I've got it on a, you know, TaylorMade M2 in the back there. You're just going to have to go take it off and get a different head for it.
Yeah.
Like that is wild. And you can't do that really anywhere else, which is pretty sweet.
No. And it's very difficult to be able to have all those SKUs.
Yeah.
Like if we wanted to have 5 at every location of every Ventus shaft or DI or whatever graphite design, doesn't matter. Pick your manufacturer. I mean, that's a lot of dough just said in there.
Pretty cool.
But with our club tech guys and how quickly they can turn things around, the inventory levels are astronomical. I mean, I remember when we were trying to get on our website to be able to say that we had 12,000 clubs, just 12. Now we have over 160,000.
Yeah, that's wild.
It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Wild.
If you can't find it there,
yeah, well, and
it's
just
difficult.
In general too, like I feel like the average golfer has really started to, you know, do the second swing approach, which is like go in and get fit. And actually, you know, when you go through a full bag, we're not all pros, right? Like if you look at my bag, I think I have 4 different manufacturers, right? I could play TaylorMade wedges, a Ping driver, all the big guy now.
As of now.
Ping irons, right?
Well, I mean,
it'll change in a month.
How much are we going to bet? Because he said,
here's our deal.
Yeah, we just made a deal. Because
we just had it. So here's our deal. So our deal is Jordan can change his irons between now and September 1st. But if he does, he's got to give me his current irons. So every iron that he changes, he has to give me
now,
the full set of irons. He had given me, and then I'm going to bring him to you, and I'm going to trade him in for a credit.
Absolutely.
He'll probably still be on the 30 days.
So you're involved in this.
Return.
Yeah. I think September's pretty generous.
Yeah.
I really do.
So he can buy, but there's a financial penalty, and the financial penalty.
But it's not just tweaking the current clubs.
No. He can tweak.
It's wholesale changing.
It's new irons. Or wedges.
You're so effed.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You are
dude.
So
this is
effed.
The goal.
That's what I'm saying.
I need to see what I'm fully capable of playing.
I can't wait
the same
to play
clubs.
Those blueprints.
He liked them. That's
you
why.
Know what? They're going to look good in your bag.
Yeah, they are.
I think the over under should be June 1st. Yeah. You talk about September. This is a joke.
I love your guys' confidence in me.
Mm. No. It's just reality.
I can't even remember. Oh, so, we were just talking about different manufacturers being able to be in the bag.
Absolutely.
And like when you fit somebody, like how often are you actually fitting him into like a full TaylorMade bag or full paint bag or full, right? Like you're probably going different each time. And like, I'd be curious to know why that is or why you think that is.
I think it's a generational, like club generational thing. You know, Titleist forever was like Ping, just forgiving, never really chased the speed game like the Callaways and the TaylorMades of the world. Like with Titleist TSI line, they really said, all right, USGA and your rules on speed, we're going to figure out a way to join the speed game. And they did in a big way. And same with Ping. but haven't lost sight of the speed. Now, a lot of times what happens is, just like with cars, I mean, I grew up in the car business. My father was fourth generation Chevrolet dealer. I get in a Ford, I don't know where anything is. I'm not comfortable with it. It's foreign. So therefore, I'm not going to buy a Ford. You look at a TaylorMade going through the years, and as they progress, yeah, they change color, materials, and whatnot, but it still has that TaylorMade feel. Or same with Ping, shape, and whatnot.
Their driver heads are all very similar, yeah.
Yeah, all of them. But it's home. It's familiar. But with the use of TrackMan and all the other tools we have, it's really opened up the eyes of people that were like me. I played Mizuno for 24 years. That was my Chevrolet. Then I tried Callaway set irons, and I was like, wow, these actually feel really good, and they do something a little different than what my previous Mizunos did. So I said, why not try it?
How much of feel is sound?
A lot. A lot.
Wow, especially I've never thought about that question that you just asked.
Oh, it's huge.
I've never thought of that.
It's huge, especially with a driver. Like I play a Ping driver. I love their drivers. I have multiple other manufacturer drivers, and a couple reps that I know probably not going to like that.
Ping has that like thud. It's like, well, kind of a...
The G425 Max was almost as annoying of a sound, especially in a hitting bay with padded walls.
Yeah.
Which I'm getting set up for my future home in an insane asylum. So I'm good. But it worked great. But people could not stand the sound. It's not as bad as like a Nike Sasquatch from back in the day. Yeah. Or some Cobras out there.
Or whatever it was.
Oh,
that yellow.
My goodness.
Driver.
If somebody comes in for a fitting and they pull their head cover off and it's one of those, I'm like, we're not even going to hit this. This is not.
Yeah. Is it that bad?
It's some of them sound like a fungal bat.
I mean, there's a reason they're not making any more equipment. Fungal, right?
Well, that might not be the only reason, but you know what? You can tell if you're at your local golf course and you hear that fungal bat sound.
Oh, yeah.
You know somebody's got some Nike going on, and it's just like, all right, they need to come and see us.
What's the, we're kind of jumping around here, but what's the Notre Dame connection?
I went there from 99 to 03.
Oh, yeah. Oh, somehow, you're a Notre Dame grad.
Yeah. I somehow got out in 4 years.
That is remarkable.
I don't know how.
But C's get degrees is...
Well, no, right? I said D's, but, you know, it is what it is. I always wanted...
They just wanted you out. Like,
right. They're like, hey, we're sick of this guy. But I always wanted to go there. We had a family connection with my uncle and a cousin, and going to Notre Dame in the late 80s and seeing Rocket Ismail outside the bookstore. And then watching him return kickoffs for touchdowns and tailgating in the crowd. I wasn't tailgating in the late 80s. Don't worry. But it's just a very, very special place. So I didn't play college golf there. I got recruited at a handful of schools. But like I said, I always wanted to go to ND. And
you sacrifice playing so you can go to Notre Dame?
Yeah, I'll take the life.
Because you're a good golf. Like, what are you, plus two?
Yeah, like plus one something.
Yeah, it's usually.
I.
You can light it up. You can putt.
I hold my own. Well, that's.
My observation of Ross' game is he's just completely fearless. He just hacks.
That would be a good
when you talk about like the mental aspect of not caring.
Yeah, that's him in a nutshell.
Roth is literally the person who cares the least.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'll be like, I'm working on this, where he goes, I don't give a shit. Dude, you're so good. Just go play.
And that's,
I'm like, God.
And that's right. One of the most frustrating things for me as a player. And I grew up playing in AJGA events and in all over the country, whatever, very fortunate to be able to do that. And seeing players like a Jordan that are so technical and just so into the process and how can I get better? And I love TrackMan and all the other launch monitors out there. They can really, really help a player get better. But a lot of times, especially the good younger players, they can get caught up in the numbers so much that they're trying to get zero and zero, which is rare to ever happen just once in, you know, a lesson or a fitting. That doesn't teach you how to get the ball in the hole.
You got to go play outside, you've got to play on a course.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing too. When I was growing up, the head pro was, he encouraged me to play a lot, but practice, but make it fun.
Yeah,
we called it Range Olympics. So my no fear,
this
part
is the
of it,
skill development thing I was talking about.
Correct. Like we would literally be like, all right, on this shot, and it would be a fun competition for a Coke or whatever with me and my buddies that were pretty good back in Wilmer. And it's like, all right, this shot has to start at that 150 and you got to get it left of that tree and it can't go above the tree line. And the next one, you got to do the exact opposite, but it's got to go above the tree line, stuff like that. It helps you learn how to create shots.
Yeah.
And I tell people, if the ball goes straight, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
I am like, what happened? Yeah. I messed up or the wind helped me and it looked like it went straight. But every shot on the golf course, there's an advantage of moving it one way or the other.
Yeah, that's the thing about, so two thoughts there. One is, we just talked about that, like that's my goal this year, is no technical, just all skill development. Like trying to work on my divots, trying to work on freaking hitting it fat, hitting it thin, like just working on chipping and hitting different shots, hitting high bunker shots, low bunker shots, lag putting.
Absolutely.
Hitting left to right drives, right to left, you know, just working the ball, like all that stuff. And but the quest to 0-0 is so dumb for so many reasons. Number one, your misses, if you're going after 0-0,
can you tell the audience what 0-0 means?
Yeah, so zero path, zero face angle, right?
Yep.
So let's just say you miss 1 degree in to out, and then you also miss 1 degree out to in. And if you're 0-0, you're aimed at the flag. You're aimed at the flag, right? So your misses are, you're going to miss both ways by nature. Like the ball is going to be working away from the flag. Every time you miss it, whether it is, if you're in to out or out to in, and let's say you're in to out 2-4 or to 6, mama plays it like 7 in to out.
Yep.
Mama's a pretty goddamn good player, but every shot he hits is working towards the flag. He's starting it right. And some will work all the way to the flag. Some will work a little bit towards the flag, but the ball is moving towards his target.
Correct.
It's never moving away from his target.
Well, and it's not just moving towards the target. And the target, 75% of the time, for me anyways, is not at the hole.
Yeah, it's not the flag. Yeah.
Great if it cuts an extra 5 yards.
Yeah.
But if the shot requires a cut shot and there's trouble on the right, I'm going to make sure it doesn't overcut.
Yeah.
So my target is going to be 5 left.
Yeah.
If it just happens to go a little more, then it's a great shot.
Yeah.
Nobody knows the wiser except for me, but I've already forgotten about it.
Yeah.
And that's the other part, to go back to being fearless. I don't worry about the consequences because of my experience growing up and learning how to hit all those one-off shots where I'm not scared. Like, I know I've done it before and it's fun. It's fun. You find yourself in really goofy situations and then you either hit the shot and you're like, wow, that's 1 out of 100, or so what? There's a bogey, move on to the next hole. We'll double.
Yeah.
But fine.
Double.
Aaron double Roth.
Triple. Yeah. Triple. Hopefully it's a par 3.
Yeah.
What, when you're like, whether you're fitting somebody or just in general, what's the most important club or group of clubs in the bag?
Well, I'm kind of like
somebody that has 50 putters too, by the
way. Well, yeah, that's somebody's got to have a hobby. Just don't tell her about all of them. No, I would say it depends on the player, obviously, but getting it in play off the tee is huge. Obviously putting is 30-40% of your strokes. And for a lot of people it's 50. So putter would be right up there as well. And it's amazing.
Driver, putter.
Yeah. It's amazing what we can do, especially with Quintec. People don't realize that there's loft on a putter.
Yeah.
It's just like every other club in the bag. And if you have too much loft, that thing's going to fly in the air and it's not going to start rolling, truly rolling for a foot or two, if not longer. And if they have too little loft, it just goes right into the ground and then it's bouncing.
Yeah.
Good luck predicting the speed on that one.
Yeah. Do you think putter is the most underrated club to be fit?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And it's the one we use the most.
Yeah.
When we spend the least amount of time with it. But people ask me, you know, you're a good golfer. What are you grinding on the range or the short game area all the time? And it's like, no, I'm putting.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I try to drill into individuals when we are fitting putters is you go to any golf course that has a good junior program or, you know, better players that are younger, and we have plenty of them, and I'll see them after their round and they're hitting 5 foot putts for an hour at a time around the hole. And I'm like, what are you doing? Well, I missed a couple of these today. I was like, did you chip it there for those five opportunities that you missed two or three? Like, no. Oh, so you can't figure out the speed of the greens.
Yeah. Lag putting.
That's what it's called.
I told Andy, we were before this, we were talking about like our goals for the year, and we're both in interesting spots where we've kind of like switched, where he's working on more like skill work and I'm working on more technical stuff right now.
Yep.
And he asked like, what was the number one thing? And I think you probably put this bug in my head a little bit, but it was speed with putting is everything. So work on lag putting. And I worked on lag putting a ton last year. Absolutely. I think Larry Bob could put the bug in my head too. I had reached out to you and I said, who's the best putting coach that, you know, he goes, just go talk to Larry.
Larry Bob.
And I went and talked with Larry and he was like, Jordan, you know how you talk to.
Oh yeah.
Jordan. Buttons all speed, the hole will get in the way.
There's three things. To get better at putting, figure out speed. Yeah. That's all it is.
All lag putting.
Yeah. You could be the worst green reader on the planet from 30 feet. You misread it by 3 feet, but you got the speed down, you have 3 feet.
Yeah, I got 3 feet there. Yeah.
99% of people, they've got 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
And obviously it depends on where you play, but the faster the greens, the more extreme that miss gets.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have 20 minutes before a round, I'm going to spend 19 minutes and 58 seconds of it from 25 to 40 feet.
Yeah.
I don't even care if I make one. I just want to get the speed dialed in. Even though I'm playing the same course all the time, they do vary, whether it's morning, noon, or night.
Yeah, and, for sure.
One more question for me about the fitting side. So one of the things I hear a lot from people, anybody I talk to that's like getting into golf, I'm like, go to Second Swing. And you talked about this earlier. The reason is because like the great thing about Second Swing is, and people should do this. Like I'm a believer in this as a philosophy. Like if you're getting golf clubs and you're getting into the game, like get a used set of golf clubs that fit you and that are good and nice. And you'll figure out what you like and it's just the way to go, in my opinion, versus like, you know, buying the box set or whatever, right. Like get something nice that's a couple years old. But one of the things I hear a lot from people is they're like, I'm not good enough to get fitted.
Yeah, that
more reason to get fitted.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, what do you say to that? Cause I think that's just like the most not, because those are the people that have the most ROI on fitting. Like, dude, like 100%. I could go hit it good with like a lot of different drivers. Like, but if you give somebody a driver that fits them and they're a bad player versus a driver that doesn't fit them, the difference is so much bigger.
Oh, it's
right.
It's enormous. And people always ask me, you know, should I get fit for clubs before I go get a lesson, or should I go get a lesson and get fit for clubs? Well, if you've never been fit for clubs, the instructor will look at your clubs and then look at your swing, no matter how good, bad, or indifferent it is. And if they're a good instructor, they'll be like, Time out. We got a problem here. I do not want to teach you how to play the game of golf around your swing faults and the equipment being absolutely terrible for you.
Yeah.
So even if they're a beginner and the whole goal is just to get the ball airborne and forward, if we get the length right, the shaft kind of weight right, and flex, but the club head type that's right for them, it'll make those lessons pay out way more in dividends than if they just take their grandmother's or grandfather's old set of clubs from the 80s and go get a lesson. I mean,
practicing all the right things and still hitting it horrible.
Zero results.
Yeah. Cause the lofts and lines are all jacked up. And
exactly.
The shafts are too heavy or whatever.
It's a little bit of an art form from the fitting side of it. Being able to see somebody swing, asking them, you know, maybe they're a really good basketball player or hockey player, and they're 13, 14, especially on the hockey side, because hockey and golf, they coincide. I would take the NHL, sorry, my NBA and NFL friends.
Yeah.
They just go hand in hand. And if you can see the potential, you can get them in stuff that's, my goal isn't to fit them perfectly for where they're at right now. I want to set them up for future.
Yeah. Yeah, a good fitter should do that. Like they'll say, we're going to get you a set of clubs you can play for a couple of years or
absolutely. Yeah, you can grow into
Yeah.
I mean, we're not, you know, there's not a lot of parents out there with kids that are 12, 13 years old that want to buy four sets
right
until their senior year of high school. Yeah. It's not in the cards.
Yeah.
Well, I'm having your coworker, Tyler Fitzel on this week to talk specifically about equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I want to wrap up and get your thoughts. And I know you're probably not allowed to piss off different reps of different manufacturers and all that stuff. But generally they're all great. I'm sure they're all great. Generally speaking, what are you seeing right now when people come in, you know, average golfers again, getting fit? Like a lot of people that listen to us are trying to get better at golf, trying to like find those edges that they can find. Walk us through kind of like the bag in terms of drivers, irons, and then like wedges and putters of what you're seeing, like a lot of people get fit into and seeing a lot of success with kind of that, you know, low, you know, maybe not mid, but like low under 10 handicap type player.
Motivated players that are trying to get better. One of the biggest things, and we'll just start with driver. One of the biggest things that we can do for a player that is a 10, 15 down to a zero, eliminate one miss. So many players, high percentage players, have two misses. If we can start minimizing the one side or the other of the golf course.
Yeah, that's what you did for me.
Huge. Mm-hmm. And that's a game changer. I mean, my nickname growing up was Cut Boy because my cut shot was a 15-yard draw when I was a kid. And trust me when I say it took 2 years of shock therapy to figure out how to look down the left-hand side of the fairway and just let it go and not have OB left in my head. Yeah, it took a while. But I'm there. And the equipment has really, really helped. So if we can eliminate one of their misses or minimize it, you can never fully eliminate it, let's be honest. Yeah. But
you would probably say, generally speaking, like a ping plays well for someone who wants to cut the ball, right? Or hit it right?
It depends. Obviously, like everybody has adjustable drivers.
Yeah.
Most of them have adjustable weights as well, not just face angle loft. Okay. So you can really, really minimize one way or the other by manipulating the center of gravity. Now, if you have the weight back on the back of the driver head, it makes it more forgiving.
To increase MOI, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
100%. So then you can minimize the right or the left. And then you add in face angle to that, and you can really make this thing never want to go left or never really want to go right. And then from there, they have taken care of that problem, and they're off the tee and losing two less balls around, which is obviously going to improve their game.
Four strokes, right there.
One of the things with like the newer irons, there's so many of them out there now. Everybody's chasing distance. And from a fitting perspective, that's great for some, but it can be really tricky.
We need to hit our seven irons 190.
You
right?
don't.
Like, I'd rather it go 165 every single time.
I cannot tell you how many times in the last 5-10 years I have said to players, especially the faster players, I will make you a better golfer if I make you hit it shorter with your irons.
Yeah, more spin, right?
You don't need seven wedges.
Yeah.
And that's what the best players in the world do. They control the spin of the golf ball. You control the spin and the flight of the golf ball. Mm-hmm. You control the distance. You control the distance. It's just like the putting.
Yeah.
You will play better. And so many people have these clubs and they're like, yeah, I roasted that.
Yeah.
Whatever, manufacturer, that hollow body rocket launcher. Yeah. I hit my 7-iron 195. You know what? Good for you. Every other time it goes 210, doesn't it?
Right.
It's out of bounds.
Yeah.
How'd you know? Well, it's a trampoline. It's like the irons have become like drivers. And for a lot of players,
that's kind of my rule with like fittings is like, I don't, or just with a golf club is I don't want to ever hit a golf shot too pure. Right. Like, so you're like, oh man, I totally flushed that. And it's 20 yards over the green.
That was my issue with PXG.
Like that's, I want my flush shot. I want to know exactly how far the one I nut goes.
And that's to get back to the, like the stiffness and the weight of the irons. We want to get to that cliff's edge and not go over.
Yeah.
Same concept here. We don't want to get something that is awesome forgiveness wise, but is unpredictable in distance. Predictability. And that's something that a lot of players don't think about. They think dispersion is just right and just left.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's also deep and short or long and short.
Yeah. It's north south.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about that. I'll leave the left and the right up to the PGA professionals of the world. My job is consistency distance wise.
But, and here's a, we got a few minutes left, but let's talk about real quick, just kind of like general wedges and grinds. I think that's where a lot of people get in trouble too. And I struggled with this for a long time. Was like, I would have wedges that would just dig into the turf and I'd be like, I am chunking everything. And I would switch and I'm like, I'm thinning everything. Like what should people, people that play in Minnesota, right? Like need to play different wedges than people that play in Arizona, right? Like what do people need to think about?
Well, a lot of it has to do with obviously angle of attack and the conditions of the turf that you're on. In general, we find, and Larry can attest to it when you get him on here, bounce is your friend. For a majority of players, they are not playing with enough bounce. And, I mean, let's say we were members at multiple places in different states or countries, for that matter. Turf conditions are different. I'm not going to play the same equipment in Florida, wedge-wise, that I would play, say, up here at, like, Chaska Town Course, where it's a nice spot. The turf is good. It's not really fast and really firm. I'm going to have two different worlds there. So it's really matching it up with the conditions that you normally play in. And in Minnesota, in general, at majority of golf courses, it's a little bit damp. You need a little bit more bounce. If you're a sweeper, it's pretty simple. Less bounce. If you're steep, you need more bounce. Sand, soft, more bounce. If I'm going to Florida and
I can think that, people need more bounce is what correct. It sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a fine line.
One more for me. I'll get one more question in. There's a lot. So the golf club business is kind of trendy. There's trends. We've kind of been on this speed quest. It feels like the scales are starting to tip and now we're back into like the forgiveness.
Absolutely.
We transitioned through forgiveness into just forgiveness. do you think that's kind of what the next couple, I mean, we've kind of hit our limit with speed. Is that what's coming the next couple of years? And then, you know, what's going to happen is people are going to start taking loft off of irons again. They're going to add loft to irons and they're going to say they're more forgiving.
There you go.
So exactly. It's just going to be like a 7-iron.
We're going to be
from like 10 years ago. Circle. And they're going, oh, it's so much more forgiving.
It's going to be full circle. Yeah. Trust me. I feel like these manufacturers.
Do you think that's going
to
happen?
So I hope.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope because so many people would benefit from airborne and stop, not trying to predict, okay, if I land this 10 feet short, it's going to run out 15 yards and I'll stay on the green.
Yeah.
But yeah, the equipment is so good now and it's so fast. Even the most forgiving drivers are still fast. With the USGA, and I won't even comment on that.
Are you pro or anti rollback?
Whatever makes the game more fun. It depends on what level you're at.
All right.
Whatever, like for what I do, if we could get a golf ball that would go farther, but spin more, even if it's illegal for the PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, do it 100%. The game is supposed to be fun and it's the hardest thing to do next to hitting a Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
It's 100% the hardest sport on the planet. That's why Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky's of the world love this game because you can never perfect it.
Yep.
And majority of average golfers, they just want to go have fun with the boys and, you know, have a few beverages and, you know, have a little bet here and there and get around and have a good time. And it's going to have to come back a little bit because, like I said, even the most forgiving drivers now are super fast compared to 5-6 years ago. And it's great to see.
Yeah. You start to get into like, you know, race car mode where it's like, it's a little easier to drive a Prius than it is like a Formula One track car.
100%.
With a driver, right? I mean, like the more it spins, the more fairways you're going to hit.
Correct. And at the end of the day, the less the player thinks, the better off they're going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like with me, with the driver I have, I just step up to the tee box knowing I've got the most forgiving driver for my swing in particular. And I swing as hard as I can.
Yeah.
Zero fear does help, but
yeah.
Last question. So good. Last question. Blade or mallet?
Majority of players, mallet. more absolutely
easier to use.
A putter is just like every other club in the bag. The further away from the face you have weight, MOI.
Yeah.
And even Tiger doesn't hit it in the center every time, even though he's got that sweet,
sweet wear mark. Yeah, I saw that picture. It's pretty sweet.
Beautiful. Yeah. Love it. But even they miss hit it.
Yeah.
Look at Rory ripping on Scotty.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you need a mallet. Well, you know what? There's something to be said about it. But it's got to fit your stroke type, too. Yeah. And you got to have confidence when you set that down behind the ball.
Yeah.
Yep.
You really do.
100%.
Thanks for coming on, man. This was fun.
My pleasure. This is great.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll do it again at some point.
I can't wait. Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, man.
All right.
Thanks, Roth.
Take care.